you go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
When a competent observer looks for signs of despotism in a community, he looks beyond fine words and noble phrases.
It's society. They work for each other. They pay each other. They buy houses. They get married and make children.
That just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
Go into the automobile business and compete with the auto trust. Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores? Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise.
Because it's just a big money-making machine. They're wandering through a maze of inauthentic, fake landscapes, and they can't escape.
The message in all this is that the capitalist system in America is unfair and is, in fact, a failure at providing for basic human needs or maintaining continued national growth.
I can't wait for, like, the episode of, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where all the contestants, like, team up and they overpower the host and they share the money.
Bottom-up horizontal connection is sharing at all levels, not top-down control.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Because as communities go, so goes the nation.
Hello and welcome to this edition of The Three Left Show. I'm your host, Dan Platt, and I'm going to have my guest host, Hassan Imawani, who is going to cut in abruptly, as what happens with podcasters who do their own engineering. The first 10 minutes of the show was not properly recorded. And then I started recording it as soon as we got on track with our main topic, talking about NIMBYism and urban issues. I rambled for a little bit, so you're not missing much, and mentioned Democratic candidates, which is where Hassan cuts in. So enjoy!
In general, we're all very divided. There's 20 people running for office, 30 people running for the Democratic seat. Whatever it might be, and it
23 right now.
It just kind of goes to show that even though we're all Democrats, we all think differently about what should be done, while Republicans are very, they stick to their God, guns, and glory, you know, mission, where Democrats are like, hey, we want this in our backyard, and hey, we don't want this in our backyard, and hey, I want to build here, and hey, I don't want you to build here. Hey, the bird... the swallows are gonna be endangered if you build this, three stories too high, and if you build it one story too low, then the earthworms down below are, you know, it's just like, there's a never-ending amount of...
Why don't you break chatter. Down what that comment means?
Okay, so...
Get us into our first topic,
let's So, say. Here we are...
Legitimate one.
Here we are, Albany, New York, 2019, it is... June 1st, and the city is trying to make strides, you know, in terms of development and growth, and you have two factions. The two factions are, we want development and growth, and then we want absolutely no development and growth. So...
Sounds absolutist.
That's exactly the way it is right now, though. I mean, from what I see on, different blogs and posts and etc. There are a lot of people in the city, and I think they're kind of older residents of the city, that really don't want to see five-story apartment complexes going up.
As long as they're just not next to them.
Right.
See, they want, like, no, the general tenor, and as someone who's paid attention to local political races, campaigns, winning campaigns are always those that said, I'm going to increase the tax base. Not increase taxes. Everyone hates higher taxes. But you increase the tax base, you make the pie bigger, and then, oh, we don't have to. We could even lower taxes eventually at some point in time. So the charge has been for the city government to increase the tax base, whatever the hell that means, or however hell they do it, as long as they're increasing the tax base. And within our late capitalist system as it is, the only way to do that is to have high-end development, luxury development, or rather just capitalist development, which is going to be overpriced, come in the city and build whatever they think is marketably feasible, because they have their own market studies and whatever to go off of who can buy afford a $1,000 studio apartment, or rent a two-bedroom that's $1,500 a month.
Well, that's one of the things that boggles my mind about the people that are anti-growth. And I don't want to even call it development, because growth and development are two different things.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so it's just growth at this point. It's not development. It's not creating a solid, affordable housing stock. It's not creating opportunities for small businesses. It's just, hey, there's money to be made on these luxury apartments. There's tax dollars to be taken, tax breaks to be given, money to be made. That's growth. That's growth. Development is really kind of nurturing the city, nurturing its assets, and kind of repairing its deficits. That being said, there are countless people that I see online that are really just up in arms about any kind of building above two stories going up. They say, this is going to block my view. It's going to, and this is, you know, this is not a healthy thing, and this is going to create traffic issues. And, you know,
the city doesn't have the infrastructure for increased density.
Right.
That's what they're, that's some of their argument.
With regard to developments on Western Avenue, for example. I know that there's a five-story development that was proposed.
Yes.
On Western Avenue, probably closer to SUNY. And people were coming up with every single excuse in the book to try to stop it.
It's among other strip malls. Like, it's almost like an office park, but it's just not a full swap of land. It's just adjacent to the main avenue. Exactly. And so it's densifying dense block.
Yeah, it's still on Western. On Western. So.
And I think it started as maybe six stories, and they cut it a floor short.
There's
basically the surrounding neighborhood residentially speaking, all outside of the commercial strip of the main avenue, Western, is, because it goes west, of course, almost suburban in character. It's still the city of Albany, and sometimes the houses are close together and such that it's not like suburban low density, but it's still there's still an isolated character to the neighborhood itself, that some of these streets are dead ends and they're not throughways.
Well, the truth of the matter, Dan, yeah,
they don't like being reminded even that they're in the city, but
very true. And they are afraid that these buildings will bring in people who party, will bring in people who...
most likely the case, actually.
You know, people who are not necessarily old and settled and quiet. It'll bring some life and activity to their neighborhood, and they do not want that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I've been thinking about is, in terms of transit-oriented development, these buildings are very good. I mean, you stick one decent bus stop in front of a 5 or 6 story apartment complex, and especially on Western, they get up to SUNY very quickly. They get down to St. Rose.
The main mall is also further down Western, and then there's Stuyvesant Plaza, which is also kind of a outdoor mall. It's basically a very large shopping plaza.
Exactly.
I kind of wish it wasn't, because it's like a row of shops, but with a giant parking lot in the middle of it, which isn't urbanistically cool to me. Especially since like the bus pulling in and out has to circle around the surrounding office park.
Well,
all used to be marsh, by the way, so it causes water issues.
A part of their NIMBYism, they're not in my backyard, is the promotion of public transit. Usually, people see that as the promotion of, or the dissemination of low-income people into their neighborhoods. You know?
That's underlying a lot of this.
Exactly.
They're racist. It's like, there's bias. And it's not, it is against, it's more classist first, but it intersects with race, is what I want to clarify. That's what intersectionalism as a concept is for. That it hurts black people disproportionately because there are the policies that marginalize or ignore or, in fact, are oppositional to the poor. Rather, the poor being able to get around to get to job sites, and that's how the bus system has been trying to accommodate them more.
Well, the bus...
But yeah.
The bus actually...
But like when there was a...
Should reduce traffic.
Yeah, and when a homeless drop-in center... Yeah, they don't see it that way, it seems like. I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
You know?
But there was saying, in another in a different part of the city, there was a homeless drop-in center.
There's going to be far too many vehicles on the road. And
that's what they say. Yeah.
Exactly. The fact is, if these are going to be students, they don't want to have a car for the most part. They will use the bus, especially if they're right on the bus line. That will take them downtown so they can go do their partying.
They're reminded that everyone's like them. Studying. Everyone has a car. Everyone wants to drive as much as possible or something like that. Drive everywhere they go. Even if it's like 5 blocks to get pizza, they'll drive.
The other thing that I don't quite understand is
congestion.
Is something that the city should be much more clear about. Okay? How does growth reduce or help to reduce taxes? Okay, because I own property in the city. There have been more and more things popping up, more buildings popping up, more units coming about. My taxes have not gone down. I can assure you. And as a matter of fact, I actually only think taxes have gone up. So I'm all for...
And thus, why are we even for this growth if it's not actually
right.
growing
it's not
the
gonna,
city?
If it's not
it seems
help.
To be only growing the
developers.
Yes, exactly. Filling their pockets, not filling the city coffers. Thus, through the development agency, tax breaks and tax and deferments. So when we left off, we were talking about the dichotomies, the contradictions, perhaps, or at least the issues of the thoughts behind urban growth. What does that exactly mean, and how does that stop it from growth, capitalist developments coming in, and gentrification, as it's called, from actually benefiting the middle class or backsliding middle class in Albany, which is just so afraid of the poor people disrupting their lives. Generally saying, calling them nuisance people, or rather, the way they live, nuisance properties, which seems to be general parlance of properties owned by slumlords, or absent landlords, or absent owners. They're called nuisance properties, as if they're, you know, annoying in some way, and not just things that are the byproduct of the waste of our system, or the inefficiencies of markets, as I like to interpret it. But otherwise, let's continue with the eccentricities of the personal being the political, and how this upcoming city hall, the common council meeting this Monday, it's too much. All of these new developments, all these new developments happening, and these are all like, you know, multi-unit, some apartment complexes of 20 units here, 10 units there. Capitalize Albany, which is the pseudo public arm of the city that basically collects private donations or investment and acts as kind of like a clearinghouse bank.
So we were speaking about new developments in Albany and the sudden rise of luxury apartments popping up everywhere, and there's basically two movements in Albany now. There's a movement that is very against any kind of development, really. And then there's a movement that I kind of align with, and we need to see more things happening in the city. More apartments being built, more businesses being brought in. Though, both of these groups have issues with them, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the not-in-my-backyard folks, they are very stuck in their ways. They don't want their 1960s neighborhood to change at all. whereas the people that want all kinds of growth aren't necessarily seeing that it's not helping. It's not helping the city. It's not helping promote pedestrianism. It's not helping promote good design. So they both have some things that I don't like about them, both of these groups. And really what needs to happen is a discussion of what Albany is. Is it just a place for people to come and
have a fun run?
And toil 9 to 5?
Oh, yes, and that too.
Or is it a place to go and get drunk? Or is it a place to get an education? Like, what exactly is Albany? And what are we trying to do with it? That conversation has never been really had. I mean, I know you want to, people will say, oh, well, look at Albany 2030 and, or, you know, whatever, 2020 or whatever these plans are that...
I've read them.
And, you know...
They're vague as hell.
They're extremely vague. They're yes. like, oh, we need access,
as to, not upset
access
anyone.
To the waterfront.
As not to upset anyone.
It's like, well, duh. You know?
Yeah.
We need, you guys need to focus on the creative economy. Okay. It's just a bunch of, like, vague things that are supposed to make you feel good.
But how does it translate into policy and without spending any money? So I think I'll be glib and call them the pro-gentrification, because they're more or less, some of them are progressive activists and people I know, but I'll typify them as being yuppies. Maybe they are a professional class who still have good paying jobs, so they're not going to be priced out of their homes. They can't afford these new units even. And so there's an assumption that, like, these new developments will fill the city coffers to buy the infrastructure, the walkable city, to build the bus lines and all the things that make that we see European cities being able to afford, because they actually have a tax system or a planning system that somehow actually meets people's needs. And also other countries have cities where when someone messes up, they're actually held accountable. They may actually be fired. That does not happen in our city, in our East Coast cities. We have patronage networks. We have people who are all cousins, and they will not fire each other. And there's no outside force to fire them unless they are caught committing a crime. And even then, there's the long process of forcing a DA to indict someone, which they don't want to do because they're also caught up in the patronage network. Who do you think paid for their election campaign to have them be DA in the first place? And all these other operators and stuff, apparatchiks. So there's, and general liberal civil society, let me just make the point, that general liberal civil society, as I've paid attention to it in the last decade, in my history of activism, that they've actually all been pro-gentrification, but just not knowing. So the general, like, liberal dream of activists, going back to the 80s, was to have mixed-income neighborhoods. How do we help poor people without actually spending on welfare and infrastructure? We just bring in people who do have money to live in Albany, live in the neighborhood, live in the hood, and then they'll just at least make the hood look half good, at least some of the houses. And they'll be good models. They'll be role models for the teenagers with no hope in their lives because they're not going to get a professional job. They don't go afford an education, so on and so forth.
Well, actually see that there are obviously downsides to it, but with enough guidance and enough good policy, I do think that neighborhoods that are underutilized, underdeveloped, can actually benefit from this kind of growth. And that's where growth and development come hand in hand. So, a neighborhood like Grand Street, for example. Grand Street has so many little positivities, I will say, okay? It's a very
moments.
Yeah, positive moments. I like that. Okay. There's a lot of different businesses along here, and it's a very vibrant community. It's right next to the plaza. It's right in downtown. You can walk to the river from here. You can walk to Pearl. You can get to quite a bit of amenities. However, it has been wholly ignored in this kind of blind growth of Albany. I feel like we could, this neighborhood could use higher, higher stories of buildings, like 5 to 10 stories would not be bad down here. Mm-hmm. And people would start moving in primarily because it is, has an excellent location. And if you can turn the tide over, for example, or so to speak, people will start moving back into the city and people will realize that, hey, this is a really neat neighborhood. There's all kinds of Italian restaurants here. It's like historically Italian. There's opportunities for other little businesses.
Well, they're all closing one by one.
They are because
they're aging out.
The neighborhood's been ignored. That's why. Mm. Because business in general in Albany is ignored. Small business, that is.
Or rather, take it for granted.
It's taken for granted and ignored. That's the bottom line. You know, if the city wants to promote local business, they need to do more than go and cut a ribbon on the opening day of a business. They need to keep up with them. They need to, the day after that ribbon is cut, they need to say, hey, what do you need from us? How can we help you develop into a better business that our constituents and our residents will utilize for the next 100 years?
It undercuts how bare bones the staffing or the roles that the city assigns itself or that people demand of the city to even have. So there's we're all anathema, apparently, except for radicals, of any kind of actual planning from the local level and make it democratic. When you say, you know, regulating the market, let's say, to make gentrification work for everyone, I don't think you harness capital forces to work for everyone, because capital is going to only benefit capitalists. And there's this common tenor that, like, you know, look, it's still rising tide lifts all boats. That's a myth to me. But otherwise, because otherwise the poor are priced out. So you have this dynamic that the homeowners of Albany, the voters, because the people who own properties are the voters, like yourself. Now, I vote. And I'm a renter, but I'm also politically conscious and stuff like that. Not to throw shade on anyone. But generally, if you're an owner, you have more incentive because it's your money that's being used to fund. The bare bones assessments of the city do not, and their ability, and they don't have a whole staff of people managing things, or rather to keep up with businesses. I mean, that's like a full-time job for like 3 people. We have a lot of small businesses.
Well, Dan, you know me.
We don't even have an office like that, right?
So. I'm very much. There's a term. There's a Japanese term called Kaizen, and it's bringing things down to its most basic and bare bones utilization, so to speak, like maximizing efficiency, in essence. Now, I believe that if there was one person, literally one person, who was tasked with following up with businesses in Albany, that's all there would need to be. That one person would have the in with the city hall, and they would also have the in with the business community. And they would just make phone calls, they would make visits, they would collect data, and then they would report back to the council members and the mayor, and there would be policy made based on this person's recommendations. I am a business owner in Albany, okay? I've been so for the last 5 years. I've operated my business for 10 years. I have not once been approached by the city in any regard to say, hey, thank you, or hey, what can we do for you? How can we keep you here? Not once. That's something like
that goes for most of our institutions that take the small fry for granted. I mean, this brings to mind the unions, business unions, who take for granted that they have new members coming in, coming and going. But because, let's say, it's a transient worker, a younger worker like myself, they don't care. They don't. There's no orientation when someone becomes, say, an employee of a unionized place to say, like, okay, we're going to explain and going to educate you on the benefits of the union. So that any propaganda campaign will be completely worthless from the employer's side. that we're going to explain all the benefits, what you get, and the process of grievance procedure and how to make use of the fact that you do have a contract. We're going to explain the contract to you. We're not just going to, as the store does, the corporation, just hand you the packet of the contract or the employee handbook and leave it at that.
Capitalized Albany, for example. Okay? Mm-hmm. They're tasked with promoting the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's, in essence, their job.
To investors, yes.
Okay. Have they looked at the people that are already investing in the city? Have they looked at the people in the business?
You're not a millionaire, Hassan, though.
That's the problem.
The language is, yes, as you said, put it, promote the city. What is left out is, and of course it's always about what's left out in such documents, is the actual agenda, which is promote to millionaire investors, promote to downstate investors. Okay, not promote the city to those who are already living here. We're already captured as far as they're concerned. We are not going anywhere or something like that. Now, bringing to mind like your suggestion of that one person could do that job, it brings to mind that a social worker can maybe, Max, do house visits to maybe 30 to 60 people that have that many cases. And if I imagine, let's say this person, this hypothetical staffer, doing a monthly check-in. Even if it's just 10 minutes or so, but it probably would go longer, half an hour, hour. Maybe they could do a few of those meetings a day. Maybe they could hit max 100 businesses. Now, there are hundreds in Albany of various types, and getting a hold of them, and it's that. I'm just making the case that it would take more than one person.
We live in 2019, okay? There's
no technological fix for being a sociable, connected person.
There is.
We think that there is, but there isn't.
There is. That's the bottom line. You have 20 different ways to get a hold of people now, okay? You have 20 different ways of receiving feedback. Beyond just a good old-fashioned phone call, this person could reach out. They can focus on sections of the city. This month, we will focus on this section. Next month, we will focus on this section. After a year, I guarantee you, they'll have hit nearly 50% of the businesses.
And that would be a lot more than nothing. I'm your host, Dan Platt, with Hassan Imawani. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Look at me. I'm turning into tragedy. Can't believe it's happening. I'm not alive, but I'm breathing. Every day I'm in a cage. Everything is going through the changes. Promises to reason to this argument. I'm able to deny the fact. No one comes to this extent to look for something better than the one before. Everyone is scared of all the changes. To find another way, you learn to cry.
So let's see. When we left off, I wanted to relate that it was being celebrated by a councilman and his constituency that a lower class housing building, a building of apartments, affordable housing, but because it was decided by the surrounding homeowners that it was a nuisance property, you know, the poor people there, maybe they played music too loud, maybe they did some drugs or something of that nature. There's always a myriad number of complaints, usually stemming from the fact that the landlords or the owners of such properties are absent, slumlords themselves, and that's usually paired together. Rather than dealing with the owners, the landlords, but usually it's about like finding a new owner for it, you know, kicking out the old landlord, having a new landlord, a new owner. But that new owner is not going to maintain whatever shitty property is there. They will demolish it and then build something new and improved and gentrified, which is something everyone cheered for. Thus, poor people have moved out of the neighborhood and problem solved magically. Of course, people displaced. That kind of disruption is not, you know, talked about. I mean, in the last few months, we had a altercation with the police, which was also around a nuisance property, because you had a home where the landlord is not nearby. They don't enforce any kind of, the citywide noise ordinance that at 10 o'clock you shouldn't be playing 70 decibel music outside or inside, and which is hardly enforced, and it's very hard to, obviously, you know. It's a matter of mindset and trust between, or rather respect between neighbors. And, you know, when you're underclass, a society that doesn't have any respect for you, you generally don't have respect for society, even if that's a neighbor who wants to get to know you or what have you.
I didn't read too much about that incident. Uh-huh. Do you know the incident you're talking about?
The cops beat up badly the people who basically, they weren't being able to fight, but they otherwise, A, didn't let the cops in the building at first. Rather, the police kicked in the door without a warrant. But it was a nuisance property. They had, you know, they get multiple calls from, actually, as it turns out, an individual across the street who owns a print shop and was all very like, thank God bless the cops. And after they beat up these young black men, because they hold parties there, rather an after-hours club, once all the bars close. Oh, I wonder why the bars close at 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Because of ordinances, because of NIMBYism, of like, well, we don't want to live in a bar district, even though I moved to a place where there's bars. And then there's a general, you know, there's a need, from an urban planning point of view, this is where, like, what I've read comes in, is that, and I mentioned this on the other program here on the station, that the neighborhoods need to be mosaic. Like, they need to be self-contained modules or areas where it is, in fact, one subculture. A subculture of retirees. A subculture of party animals. And that means, you know, yes, that means, to the most part, also class and racial and ethnic divisions. But a mosaic, those boundaries between these subcultures shouldn't be walls of policing and capital enforcement of, like, you know, we're going to invest here and not there. Because the homeowners will be invested in by the city because they can complain and they are paying the salaries and they vote. And you can't really, because what exactly are they voting for? What council member running for office is like, I'm running for the right for bars to stay open later or something like that. That's not winning.
Dan, campaign. You're right. There should be defined districts in a city. You know, there should be if you want to party till 4 a.m., that's fine. But there are reasons as to why there is no pure street of 4 a.m. open bars. I mean, you can't necessarily sustain a neighborhood like that. There's always going to need to be people that live above the bars, right? Again, I don't know much about the incident. I always hate it when I see, you know, the cops involved in some kind of brutality. Though I will make a point that there was some very positive news about the police recently, some tragic news along the lines of, like, homes being burned down. There was something like 10 or 12 or something like that homes that
mm-hmm.
caught on fire and burned down. So there's a huge gaping hole in one of the neighborhoods in the city off of Central. It's mostly an immigrant neighborhood, but the cops actually saved a boy's life, reacted quickly, and, you know, because they were there to help, they did, and it's always good to see that. Now, I want to kind of circle back around to the NIMBYism and the...
Please do.
Yeah, the ideas that our city is torn apart between two different factions of...
Torn apart.
It's torn apart, really, because there's a small group...
They're about to fight in the streets.
Right, exactly. They're going to have a rally against each other. And I can almost guarantee you that there are going to be more NIMBY bots, so to speak, than there are going to be walkable bots, so, you know, if you will.
You think so?
I think so. And it's not necessarily because they have a better platform. It's because they're usually older people
who have time on time. Yeah, and they can go to see Hall exactly. at 6 o'clock
like,
on Monday.
Have, you know, who are have cars and who have the ability to get places where they need
they're going to drive down the downtown and create congestion.
Well, sure, and they'll park in front of the city hall and
complain there's no parking.
It's exactly their reason. Oh, there's already not enough parking.
Yeah,
but they lack vision. I do think it's important that the walkable Albany, which I want to mention as well. It's a good organization.
They're very new, by the way. They're only like six months old. It's led by a guy, I'll describe him as, right, you know, a yuppie, professional, has a kid, very nice, but also bougie.
I will concur. I like him. Yes. I met him.
Oh, he's totally likable.
I think it's good to have, you know, something to fight back with. And I don't even like calling it fight, but like reason back with the NIMBYists. Though
I don't think it's a matter of reason. I mean, the motivations of NIMBYism is...
I went to the meeting. There was
I don't have control, which four, is legitimate.
I think there were four people at the meeting.
Which meeting?
At the walkable, one of the last walkable alternates.
I guess that was last month. The month before that, there was like 20. Hmm. It wasn't small.
What was that?
That was the week I went. So, of course, I think a lot of other people went to check it out. And to me, like, their vision was actually pretty small. It was, I mean, this is, I'm speaking of its organizer, who's basically, it's the one man and anyone who's willing to help him, which is not really a recipe for
exactly,
an organization that's going
the
to.
This is what Albany is all about. There's no real method for organized. Time donation, you know, towards something like that.
Well, I'm slowly working on that, but it's very socially complex
it's a difficult matter because obviously other people have things to do, and like that's what I was saying with the number of people, the number of people that will end up showing up in support of this walkable Albany side, it's gonna be small. I can almost guarantee you. I mean, I'm interested to see. It might be like 10 or 15 people.
That's a good showing for City Hall, for a common council meeting. I mean, the room itself limits itself to, maybe this is by design in a way, of how many people can be in the room.
If we get there too.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna be. Mostly because as a, not a neutral side, but see, there needs to be, as another radical friend of mine pointed out, because he shared the post about the celebration that low-cost housing was torn down and high-cost housing is going to be put in its place, and that's something to celebrate. So, like, there needs to be an anti-gentrification movement that's for more common ownership and control of neighborhoods, as well as, I don't know, just changes in policy that actually promote, not just say, we're for affordable housing, which is the same way that, you know, Democrats say they're pro-labor or something when they're obviously, well, sometimes they are, but they have to be like pushed and pushed and pushed to just do something that benefits workers. So there's no movement because, as I've said, the civil society in Albany, by civil society I mean all the nonprofits, all the activist organizations, neighborhood associations, it's for the most part been either, yes, following along the lines of pro-gentrification, we want mixed income, we do want developments, but the right kind, the kind that we envision will happen, and that somehow, you know, then we'll regulate the market in a way via policy, public policy, that will occur in a way that doesn't push the poor people out, working people out. And then the people who don't want anything to happen because they're fine with just the way everything is, but they do want a sense of peace and quiet, regardless of what part of town they live in.
Right.
So they either don't want it coming to them if they're far out where they live in the city, but not too close to the city.
Well,
it's weird.
The historical need for quiet and solitude in Albany and
or in any habitation.
The perpetual keep Albany boring ideology. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the plaza was being built. There's the tunnel under the plaza. This was 50 plus years ago. And you have to do a little kind of turnaround and then go back through the mm-hmm. tunnel that heads east.
Right.
So there's a tunnel that heads west. And then
it's the highway that goes along the river, and there's the bridge that goes across the river. And your business is adjacent to this turnaround point.
Yeah, so you can't just enter in from that Hudson Park neighborhood. You have to turn around, go back through the tunnel, go through that little kind of keyhole area, pop out on Madison, end up taking like an extra half a mile to get to, actually it's more than half a mile, because then I have to go back to the spot exactly where I was, go up Hudson, take a left on Dove, take mm-hmm. a left on Hamilton, go back down Swan.
Highways don't integrate with urban grids very well, do they?
It's ridiculous. And where I'm going with this is, apparently when the plaza was being built, they didn't create an exit or an opening into the Central Square neighborhood from that little turnaround.
The plan was for it to go through the neighborhood.
Right, but they could have literally just had a little exit. You could still have the turnaround, okay, but a little exit for people that live or work in that neighborhood. Okay, so they didn't do it because the people thought that it was going to cause too many problems, basically. It's going to cause too much traffic going up and down the street, going up Hudson.
What archive did you go dig into to see that?
I spoke with people that
were there,
have lived here for a very long time.
Gotcha.
And now, thousands and thousands of vehicles that still need to get to that same exact spot, they're going to get there regardless but now they have to take extra time to drive further and create more congestion in other parts. So, like, they have to go up to Madison and Swan, and there's just constantly a backup right there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they could have just hit Lark Street from, you know, the tunnel right off the bat without having to take an extra half a mile. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but it seems like that's not grasping the larger problem of a car-based society, that Lark Street would be ruined. It is ruined. I mean, it's partly ruined because everyone has to drive to get there, and that's the parking congestion. There
aren't
enough people
drive.
Living in Albany.
People are
going to
drive until there's a better option. So, I mean, all I'm saying.
Well, better options are smothered by the fact that
All I'm saying, Dan,
spend on cars.
If you're going to end up on Lark Street anyway, why is it that the city or the state or whoever it is imposes that thousands of vehicles every day take this extra half a mile trip to get to where they want to go?
Okay.
All right. So this whole feeling of Albany, like, oh, we don't want traffic through our street. We don't want attention. We want it to be quiet and we want it to be boring.
In the Buckingham Pond neighborhood, where you have the St. Peter's Medical Complex, I'll call it. Our medical complexes are our major hospitals, because we are a major hub for healthcare. for the entire region. And so we have two main hospitals, Albany Med and St. Peter's. And they're just constantly growing, adding more annexes, office buildings, cancer clinics, and the like. And they're just growing, and more and more commuters who work there and more people driving in to use these facilities, creating entirely, and is entirely all car-based because it's regional, and we don't have a regional transportation network that's mass-oriented. And rather than public transport, mass transport, right? Mass transport is car-based. And it goes up to the national level. It was a national investment that made the highway and mass transit as cars possible and enforces it almost against our will. But it's also, there needs to be then that mass movement against it, or rather not just oppositional, because there is this tightrope of, if you make a movement or an organization so oppositional that then you're just alienated from the rest of society, I was going on about the need for national policy change, which means a mass movement for mass transit, which is buses, light rail, not so much light rail, it could just still be buses, but bikes and boards. And that requires, yes, more densification, but it needs to be densification that's commonly owned, so it's not just capitalists who then upcharge and say, the market says that every apartment needs 2.5 bathrooms, which is going to make more space, more square footage, and more bathroom fittings, rather than just having one main bathroom. I mean, this was brought up to me when I was like, it was one of my earlier projects of helping a guy who was pro bono work of designing apartments, or rather a whole block of a multi-use project, which is now being developed into like a pseudo hotel on that site. It is, again, a bland building in the capitalist realist style, as I call it. Because once upon a time in the Soviet Union, there was Soviet realism, which was that kind of bland gray block housing, or rather the kind of architecture that promotes Soviet Union and Stalin.
So Dan,
but we have an architecture that just promotes the blandness and of the domination of capital.
That's the opposite of blandness. Actually, I saw on our little break earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I stepped outside the studio and there's a couple of cops that were kind of taking a report from a man outside his car. And I kind of asked around what was going on, and they said that somebody had thrown a beer bottle at this guy because he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat.
Which can be interpreted as just being a red hood. Have you seen those cartoons where it's, you know, a manga hat's like wearing a Klan hood?
It's
just out, you know. He's just like, oh, finally we can be racist in public. We just say it's about making America great again. You know, when there seems to be this myth that's even by, you know, millennial people our age kind of says, like, you know, once upon a time, education was good, and then it got worse. Like, I think it's one of the lies of the neoliberal agenda of privatizing schools, that, you know, schools were good, but then they went downhill. Well, how did they go downhill? Were they disinvested? What happened? Well, basically, schools were desegregated. And it's basically been a lifetime project to resegregate schools, which has now been completely fully achieved. As New York, one of the states that has one of the most segregated school systems of the country. How? Through privatization, through charter schools, and through the shifting of taxes based on local tax systems. So, and not to mention, overall, schooling system has had an authoritarian character. So if there was any kind of positive reform that was ever going to happen, it would be loosening up testing and all that stuff. Another segue, but it ties into urban development and how certain sections of the city have been neglected, ignored, because they're working class or black, or it's intersected, queer, so on and so forth. And NIMBYism itself is not a matter of what goes in your backyard, but who uses those things.
You know, we had, there was the Fryhofer's run today,
mm-hmm,
in Albany.
Fun run.
And I always just think to myself that something like that actually creates far more traffic, far more...
Well, it disrupts it. Disruption, I don't know if it, exactly. It does not create it. No, it simply creates the congestion
It does create more traffic. It definitely does, especially considering that there are certain things that are blocked
off. Oh, yeah, the people
off.
Coming in. People exactly. who wear MAGA hats
a million
coming to our city.
It's a very astute observation. Actually, kind of interesting. Didn't put the two together. But, yeah, something like a marathon disrupts far greater than a five-story building with 40 or 50
units.
Apartments. Yeah. I mean, and there are how many of these things that go on? No one's like, protesting against these kinds of events. I mean,
yeah.
Tulip Festival creates a mess. It doesn't seem fair. If you're gonna knock on something for,
Well, somebody's making money.
Someone's always gonna make money, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, the Fraunhofer's run, I'm sure it's really nice, and I'm sure everyone really enjoys themselves, but what does Albany have to do with it? What exactly, like, is the connection to Albany? Can't they just...
Fraunhofer's is here in the city?
Is that the case? I don't think so.
Well, they've been bought by Bimbo Bakeries, so they've been absorbed by a larger conglomerate, mm-hmm. of course, which really... And thus the quality has gone downhill.
Well, either way.
But whatever.
Let's be serious and think about the repercussions of having large scale events in the city. You know, they are disruptive, and maybe we should take a look at those things.
Do you feel that way about parades?
It all goes into the same bucket for me, okay?
Yeah, because there was a recent kerfuffle of, like, you know, another reason to add to the pile how our mayor is terrible is that she had the gall to ask for the St. Patrick's Day parade, that, okay, the city finances are strapped, and it takes a lot of police overtime to enforce the parade route. Can you raise the money to actually pay for that instead of us having to do it? Because the parade doesn't really make that much money. Now, of course, or for local businesses, but let's just say that the argument is, oh, it makes so much money. But that money doesn't, it's not a direct translation into the city coffers.
It's not.
It doesn't pay for itself.
No, it's not.
Rarely does anything. That's not how finances work.
The entire midsection of Albany between, like, Pearl and... like Willett, was blocked off today.
Mm-hmm.
And each street needs a police officer at the end of it. And, these things do create security risks, and there needs to be that security, that level of security, because you have a lot of people, and you're just taking on a lot of liability. Okay, so maybe there should be some creator funds that are given to the city for hosting such events.
A corporate fund or something like that.
Well,
or paid for a suburban tax base.
Exactly.
But the thing is, the whole point of it is that
people that attend these
their taxes
events,
stay low.
Their taxes
because
are,
they use
yeah,
our infrastructure
their,
for everything.
Their taxes are low because they don't live here. They don't live in the city. And
they make potholes here, yeah.
The city has high taxes, and thousands of vehicles come, and they...
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands of vehicles come in. They use the road, and they create added stress to our already stressful situation here in the city. And they don't pay anything. While you have residents that are also saying, oh, we can't deal with an additional 50 units.
To allow some of these suburban middle-income people to actually move
exactly.
to the city.
That's a very
so good there
point.
Is a... The positive, the C one, okay, I'm not a complete naysayer here, that it does allow more suburban white people to move into Albany, right? And that, in theory, big scare quotes, raises the tax base and thus provides the monies to actually aid development in the
Well,
hoods,
the other thing that I'm not quite
hoods.
Sure they understand, the NIMBYists understand, is these things do... actually raise the value of your property.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's gentrification. That's why I call it very naive, regardless of which side it is, pro or anti. They're naive to of how, and it's tied into, and I've covered this previously, of the terrible idea of making housing assets that entire retirement savings are based on, or the ability to actually have any kind of loan to do any kind of worthwhile project of, to finance it, requires the ownership of property and that property being a certain level. So the war cry is my property value is either going up or down. They seem to want it to go up for their savings, but then, of course, higher property value means higher, since taxes are tied to that value, then their taxes go up. Because it's assumed that owning property means you have an income from that property.
Can we agree that there are just some people that you will never change their minds? You will never adjust someone to...
Unless their situation changes radically.
Well, the people
that
are set in their ways about anti-growth, anti-development, they will not change their minds.
I mean, get something thrown at you long enough, you may rethink, oh, maybe my mindset isn't making America great.
Well, I can...
If enough fellow Americans
that
hate
it's,
me.
It's ruled by the small. It's ruled by minority. Because...
Certainly is.
If you took an honest look and did an analysis of, you would find that there are a lot of people that support good pedestrian design, good bicycle design, and they're just young and busy, and they don't have time to show up to some frumpy old 2-hour-long meeting where they don't usually get heard.
It's not actually democratic in the first place.
It's just they would rather it just happen. And a lot of the time, people are thankless. You know, you do things to make their lives better, but you won't, as long as things are running.
That reminds me of Cuba's political system, where it's completely direct, top bottom up democracy. But those that are elected, it is always a thankless job. But that's why there's high turnover, and everyone actually kind of you don't have those comfortable incumbencies. So anyway, let's go to the last break. We'll come back and have a little bit of fun. See you back. Three Left Show. Welcome back to the last section of the Three Left Show. I'm your host, Dan Platt, with Hassan and Mawani. We're talking urban issues, and I have a post in front of me from the General Neighborhood Association group. It's not an actual group. It's just a Facebook group. And so if you want to see the dregs of Albany and their rantings about the very real conditions in Albany and issues that concern them and how they're just not being addressed democratically or otherwise, certainly not democratically, as much as there is a consultation process sometimes in planning, usually it requires a city to hire a firm that then has, well, public meetings that do work. Like, they're good consultation public meetings of gathering input. It's always a different firm doing it. It's not something the city or the planning department ever does itself. I'm surprised they haven't really picked up the tricks of the trade and the how to do it and then hold meetings themselves in public that are actually fruitful. But this was for another one, Central at Manning. So another kind of 5-story building in the capitalist realist style. Very boring looking, just drawn in AutoCAD, and just it's designed by accountancy rather than architects, as I would put it. So don't blame architects. So here we go. So number one, I was trying to figure out what the excavation was when I was at Jack's Dyer. Geez, WTH is up with this nonsense. Does Central need another Towers or whatever it's been relabeled as these days? Welcome to future Albany, says the poster. Graft, medicine, and shitty apartments. Let's see. Number two, who the hell is going to live in these high-priced apartments? The streets in the city are a mess and need tending to. Crime is rampant. The stats don't bear that out. Sewer system is a mess. Priorities, where are they? Number three, didn't you know the streets aren't going to be repaired again this year? We're walking bridge and park, $27 million worth. As for those future abandoned apartments, it will be a great haven for all those homeless. It's unreal. The excuse about the roads was the plant didn't open until April 1st. April Fools, we are unreal. Number four. This is that vacant lot where the old APD traffic engineering building used to be. Seems like an improvement to me over that eyesore. And isn't more affordable housing a good thing? So here's somebody who's trying to be a little bit reasonable. Oh, yes, because he's the former reporter for the TU, that's why. He's always been a voice of reason. These will be going to people in financial need, maybe refugees in our open city. We voted in this administration. They are implementing their plan. I voted for Commiso Sanctuary City. Albany is the new Austin, Texas. It's called gentrification, peeps. The battle cry of Joe Small, everything sucks, change nothing. Maybe a gondola over to the ice ring over beautiful Central and Clinton Avenue. Because there's this privately planned a gondola across the river.
Well,
haven't heard any news about that in the last year.
I don't know why they think they would make any money. And, I mean, if the city is not responsible for it whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
I suppose I could say fine. If the city has anything to do with it, it's a bad idea. If it's a private entity, private money, 100%, okay, maybe. But you would have to sell your tickets for something like $30 or $40 a ticket for it to really make money.
Their survey suggested it would be like $16.
Yeah, but
more than 10.
In reality, it will be much higher. Mm-hmm. It will be far higher. I don't think you're going to have packed cars every day going back and forth.
Certainly not packed, but the point, their study was that there was enough downstate, referring to New York City, commuters taking the train up and crossing the river, that if they charged them all $20, that they would make a profit. But maybe not. Maybe they're underestimating things. I am always just for more buses. If we just have a more dedicated bus shuttle between the lines up with the when trains come and go and then go downtown, that would be probably a lot better and a lot cheaper. But that's under the public dime. And there's a general kind of anti-democratic or pro-democratic, it's hard to say. Basically, it's one of the shortcomings of representative democracy, likely, is that you have people thinking, anything the city or the state or the public sector does is terrible. And part of it is almost like this implied that they are unaccountable. And certainly when it is a patronage system, when it's a one-party state or city like we are, and as far as the duopoly is concerned nationally, it's a one-party state, that they are unaccountable. And yet, what does the private sector, is the private sector accountable? Only if you believe in the magic of this invisible hand or whatever the hell. And so goes to the developers. Who are they accountable to? They're apparently accountable to the planning department, the zoning board, But they rubber stamp or they're pressured because any development is good.
I will not take either side completely. I mean,
yeah,
there is something to the fact that okay, we're going to build these buildings and then we're going to supposedly put retail below. Where is the retail on the development that Albany Med put in? There's not much retail there.
Well, it's designed for national chains.
Exactly. And that's not what makes the city desirable. You know, people don't go to your city because you've got a Target or a Panera Bread. You know? They go to your city because you have a one-of-a-kind Jewish deli that makes amazing blintzes that you'll never find anywhere else. They go to your city because you have a cheesecake spot that's ranked best bakery in the country. You know, these are the reasons people come to Albany. Okay, I'm not over-exaggerating when I say the block that my shop is on. People come to Albany for that block. And I'm not trying to, you know, sound hubris or anything, but there's a thrift shop people travel to come and visit and patronize because it's a good thrift shop and they also do things.
It's part of the Damien Center, which provides housing and funding and resources for AIDS patients.
And then you have the Cheesecake Machismo who have been making cheesecake that's out of this world for 15 years. And mayor did not, I mean, the city does not say anything to them until, oh, they got an accolade from Yelp. We need to make today an official cheesecake machismo day, which, wonderful, but that should have been done 10 years ago, you know.
What's on the other side of the street, Hassan?
There's a huge amount of parking.
Mm-hmm.
There's a giant parking lot, and...
Which is semi-private or public?
It's private. It's
yes,
a private,
it's all private, yeah.
Public, a private parking lot, but the public does pay into using it. A lot of state workers use it daily.
Right, yes.
It
exists because of the state
I'm
workforce.
I'm not saying it's good, but I'm also not saying it's bad. There is opportunity in that parking lot, specifically if you get enough support and not enough, and you know, low opposition, as we've been talking about, to do other kinds of things in that parking lot. Have community block parties and, you know, events where there's bounce houses and, you know, antique sales and, you know, flea markets and farmers markets. That's really, like, I think it would be the best spot for a farmers market, frankly.
I suppose, but you know as well as I do that parking lots, no matter how big or small, make terrible urban spaces. They're not really, even
why,
if you fill it with something,
you
it's still
transform it. You can definitely transform.
Yeah, it's still kind of hard because as a farmer's market, let's say it's during the day, that tarmac gets hot and then everyone in that farmer's market is baking. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to do it again.
Well,
same with block parties or anything else. It needs to be real urban spaces, right?
Sure, where you've got...
It's building, more about depaving to me.
Coverage and stuff like that. Well, again, I think there's always a solution, you know, to these problems, but there are opportunities with it, and there's opportunities.
Sorry to distract you from how good the block is. I'm just like,
no, it's okay.
I'm not trying to attack the idea of it. I'm just saying, like, I wonder, and maybe I'm just trying to ask openly, is what makes this block good the fact that it's just one side of the street? That in fact you're just focused on the one side, the money isn't split up.
I actually don't
like on
think
Lark.
So. The fact is, the parking situation down in that area is awesome. It's rarely packed. I can always find a spot.
Right, because
without
it's just
parking.
One side of the street.
Right,
that's my point.
I see. Well,
sorry, that's the thought that was in the back of my head. That
it's a decent thought. It's a decent thought. I would say that there are probably truths to it, but I also just think that it's not extremely dense business. There's,
yeah,
you know, there are places that you can walk into, but other places where you would need an appointment.
It's not overly saturated either.
You know, it's like you can't just particularly walk into the Pilates place.
Yeah,
you know, we have limited hours here. I mean, on the block, like, Cheesecake sells out and they close, you know, so you don't have like round the clock need to visit this place.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking,
so it's activated for a short amount of time. It's not an all, and we also don't have the density. Even when you get lots of outsiders, let's say coming, it's not what you think of, like,
right,
with a great
and
urban
and
street.
The other thing is that a lot of people do come in from the neighborhood and they don't have to drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is one of the beauties of Center Square, and I've grown to meet and know and become friends with a lot of different people who have popped in, and they always pop in on their evening stroll or whatever it might be, and they don't have to buy anything, but they come in, say hi, and I know who they are, and we're friendly, and that's what city life is about.
All right. So thank you very much, Hassan, for coming
welcome.
In. Any parting thoughts beyond that?
Albany's a good place.
It's good. Very
it's a,
good.
It's a good place. However, there is a lack of vision and a lack of appreciation for the people that do so much for the city. There's almost a taking for grantedness. There's everything is as it should be, and there's a lot of work that goes behind that.
I would say that there is not a lack of people with vision. but that there's a lack of a structure to accommodate and facilitate that vision. That it runs up against this wall that is a city government that was built and designed 250 years ago and has been modified only ever so slightly to accommodate various crises, but only just enough to solve the problem of the day and not rethink things for democracy, mass participation, with people that talk about what they want. So we just have to do it, even ourselves, if necessary. So, my profound thanks for listening. Listening is an important skill and everything like that. Word of mouth is the best we can do to grow the show, as well as just let people know that we exist. If you can leave a review on any of the podcast platforms, this show is on iTunes, Stitcher, I don't know, Podbean. There's a bunch. Just look it up, see what's there. Let me know if you have a app of choice and my podcast isn't there. Let me know so I can rectify that. We're on Facebook and Twitter. That's our social media, Three Left Show. Our main website is threelefts.news, nothing else. That is where a full archive of the show is, as well as some other resources, but it's a little bare at the moment. So thank you very much. Got to be organized individually, collectively, so on. And so just do it. Don't wait. Thank you very much, and have a great rest of this nice Saturday while we have it. Bye-bye.